briefly, I was a very bad session guy who owned a very nice guitar. I had the other Rickenbacker 12-string besides Roger McGuinn's, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Or at least the one that the arrangers knew about. So each one of them in L.A. would hire me once.
From record producers to artists like Jackson Browne and Phil Everly, a lot of people took a chance on a young Warren Zevon as he developed as a musician and songwriter. But it's not surprising they saw something special right from the start. Tonight, on Words and Music from Studio A, we go back to January 23rd, 2000, for a conversation and performance with Warren Zevon.
Words and Music is supported by DK Eyewitness Travel Guides. Information at travel.dk.com. The guides that show you what others only tell you.
Hi, I'm Vince Scalza, host of Idiot's Delight here on WFUV. You know, it's always tough revisiting interviews with guests that have died. But with an artist like Warren Zevon, the sadness that he's gone eases just a little, remembering the sense of humor that defined his life and work. After all, the phrases, enjoy every sandwich and I'll sleep when I'm dead, were his carpe diems, showing exactly the combination of gravity and wit that made him such a distinctive writer. That's not to say he wasn't dark and reflective as well. He was. And in 2000, he tackled the issue of mortality in plain view with the album Life Will Kill You. 2 days before the album's release, Warren was my guest on Idiot's Delight, right before his birthday that year. And it's true, there is a bit of foreshadowing in the interview, but mainly it's a chance to remember this ornery, humorous, delightful songwriter, Warren Zevon, on his birthday, and leave it to him to lighten things up with his song, Porcelain Monkey.
Was an accident waiting to happen. Most accidents happen at home. Maybe should have gone out more often. Maybe should have answered the phone. Hip shaking, shouting in Golden Bay. That's how he earned his regal sobriquet. Then he threw it all away for a porcelain monkey. He threw it away for a porcelain monkey. Gave it all up for a figurine. He traded it in for a night in Las Vegas and his face on velveteen. From a shotgun shack, singing Pentecostal hymns through the wrought iron gates to the TV room. He had a little world and it was smaller than your hand. It's a rockabilly ride from the glitter to the gloom. Left behind by the latest trends, eating fried chicken with his regicidal friends. That's how the story ends with a porcelain monkey. Threw it away for a porcelain monkey. Gave it all up for a figurine. Traded it in for a night in Las Vegas and his face on velveteen. Hip shaking, shouting in Gord LeMay. That's how he earned his regal sobriquet. Then he threw it all away for a porcelain monkey. He threw it away for a porcelain monkey. Gave it all up for a figurine. He traded it in for a night in Las Vegas and his face on velveteen. Porcelain monkey. Ha 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 ha.
The song's about Elvis.
Yep.
But where,
you guessed it.
Where does the porcelain monkey come in? I'm not familiar with what that image is. Is it a real thing, this porcelain monkey?
It's too real. Yeah, Jorge and I were on the Davenport of Despair working on a different song.
Was the other one?
The Sofa of... We have a lot of names.
The Sofa of Suffering, yeah. Was that in the Davenport of Despair?
Songwriting Gehenna.
Okay.
We were working on a different song, and I noticed that Jorge, on his songwriting notebook, he had a postcard with a picture of a little monkey, you know, with kind of big, yearning onyx eyes and a yellow and black 50s kind of garish room. And he said, "That's the porcelain monkey in Elvis's TV room. That's the porcelain monkey of Graceland."
It was in the TV room.
And I said, "That's the song we should be writing."
There you go.
Yeah.
Have you seen it in person? Is it still there?
You know, I called Jorge's house yesterday, and his daughter answered, his grown daughter, and she said, "You know, a friend of mine just came back from Memphis. She hasn't heard the song or anything. She said, a friend just came from Memphis, and she said she visited Graceland, and the first thing she said to me was, 'You should see the porcelain monkey.'" So I guess it commands your attention.
Yeah. Well, you've never been there. I've never been there. Have you?
No, I've never been there. I've been past it.
Yeah.
You've been past it.
No, I've never even been past it. Never been to Memphis. Sounds like a song title, doesn't it?
Never been to Memphis?
Yeah.
Isn't it?
It may be, in fact.
Well, I've never been to
There's a song on this new album, Warren. The album called Life Will Kill You. This song called Ourselves to Know, which seems to be about the Crusades on one level, and
sure.
And on another level it seems to be about something else entirely. Can you tell me a little bit about this song, Ourselves to Know?
Well, you know, I've never been much for explaining my songs. I mean, I guess over the years I've written a few dozen songs to explain my life or explain life to me, so trying to analyzing them seems kind of take the fun out of it. But I guess it's a song about the Crusades, and it's a song about me and my friends.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it works in two different places at two different times, does it not?
I guess I'm being a little evasive about it, when in fact I was singing my friend Jackson Brown's song, The Barricades of Heaven, in my last tour, and then I would explain that here's my song about the same thing, because The Barricades of Heaven is about growing up in Southern California, being a folk singer, and so on.
Okay. So there's a song that appears on the Jackson Brown album, Looking East, from about 4 or 5 years ago, 95 or 6, somewhere in there. The song is called The Barricades of Heaven. And so you used to perform that song?
Yeah, just a couple of months ago I did.
Yeah.
In fact, I was so absorbed in performing it that, so involved in it that someone asked me, and one of my friends said, "So you grew up in Orange County too?"
Uh-huh.
You know, which is that part of Southern California. I said, yeah, I did. It's like confusing Westchester County and Hoboken,
right,
or vice versa.
Uh-huh. Okay. Ourselves to Know is the other song, the Warren Zevon song, which is on the new album, which, as Warren said, sort of deals with a similar subject. So are you generally not comfortable about talking about your songs? I mean, is there a difference like between a radio discussion and a print discussion? If Songwriter Magazine came to you and wanted to ask you about your songs, would you be as reticent?
Yes, I would be.
Yeah.
Maybe more so.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know. You know, I have mixed feelings about it. I've been asked, believe it or not, over the course of years, I'm occasionally asked to, like, get up and do some kind of, you know, educational songwriting thing. But I always say being thrown out of the house with your banjo is one of the greatest, you know, learning experiences you can have if you want to be a songwriter.
And did that happen to you?
Well, kind of, in a friendly sort of way. But, I mean, you know, there's a craft, and I'm proud of having spent my life learning it, but I would be even more reticent, and I would be even more at pains to be evasive to a songwriting magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's kind of magical, you know. It's kind of, you don't know exactly how it works. We know we work real hard sometimes, but we don't know exactly how it works. I don't really want to know exactly how it works.
Some people love to talk about it, and you know, and just kind of share all the stories and stuff like that. But I understand what you're saying as well, and you know, I've certainly dealt with both approaches.
Yeah.
As far as songwriters are concerned, do you see Jackson Browne these days? Is he well?
Sure. Yeah.
Everything okay?
Certainly.
Good.
Very
good.
Well.
Good.
You're kidding? He still looks like Rob Lowe.
There's some painting getting very old in some attic somewhere, though, right? Did you used to play with the Everly Brothers?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Back now, that was...
Not in the 50s, Vin.
No, not in the 50s, no, but in the 70s, I guess, right?
Early.
Before you started actually recording.
Uh-huh.
How did you get a gig like that? You were a session guy? You were the pianist?
Well, you know, I was a very bad session guy who owned a very nice guitar. I had the other Rickenbacker 12-string besides Roger McGuinn's, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Or at least the one that the arrangers knew about. So each one of them in L.A. would hire me once.
Once.
Yeah, but that wasn't how I got the job with the Everly Brothers. I also, one of my pals was David Marks, who was like that kind of, the Beach Boy who wasn't related. That was, I guess, I don't know exactly, punished for not being a cousin or something, or ostracized or something. But he and I were friends, and he knew Phil Everly. And he introduced me to them, and I got a job for a couple of years with him.
Did you go out on the road?
It was the first time I ever went on the road.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
And you played piano with them?
Yeah.
And recorded with them as well?
Very, very little. I recorded with Phil and I recorded with Don, but I didn't record with the brothers.
Not with the brothers, per se. Yeah. One of the marvelous things about this radio station is that it's got this incredible old vinyl library. Look what I found. The Phil Everly album on vinyl called Mystic Line. From 1973 or 4 or something like that.
That's the album that enabled me to raise the price of the plane ticket home to make my first album.
Is that true?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. We did it in London. He did it in London.
There's a co-write on here. Warren Zevon, Phil Everly, co-wrote a song called January Butterfly.
I'm sure I was just in the room. Phil's a very generous man. You know?
Oh, yeah?
Sure. Werewolves of London was his idea, you know.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was.
No, Phil Everly?
Phil Everly.
Came up with the idea for Werewolves of London?
Yes. He told Waddy and I that we should write a song for his next solo album. We should write a dance song and we should call it Werewolves of London. You know, he said, Werewolves of London.
You're not kidding me.
Oh, no.
You went from January Butterflies to Werewolves of London, huh?
He did.
Huh. Listen to this. Is that you playing piano?
I reckon.
From an album called Mystic Line. That's Phil Everly, and it's a song that is credited to Phil Everly and Warren Zevon. Although, are you telling me you don't remember writing it with him?
Not exactly. No,
really?
Well, I remember him writing it. I can't quite think what my contribution might have been.
So he just put your name on, because he was a nice guy.
Well, he was. He is a nice guy.
Yeah.
I was saying that he used to make people hire me for various things. In fact, the album that preceded this, he convinced his record company and his producer that I should write they were my first orchestral arrangements, you know. And he said, no, you got to get this guy. I've got the guy. You got to get this guy. He knows Stravinsky. You got to hire this guy. You know, and I wrote all this stuff, and a whole orchestra came, and there were stacks of... you know, music from the copyist. It was 10 o'clock in the morning. You have to get those things right.
And yeah, yeah.
And we came, walked into the studio, and Phil whispered to me, "You've never done this before, have you?" He's great.
Well, that's a neat story. That's terrific. Did you study that? Did you study orchestration and things like that? Or was he right, in fact, that you had never done it before?
He was right that I had never been responsible for, a bunch of orchestral type musicians.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
But I had some idea what I was doing, I guess.
You didn't study it, though?
Not formally.
If not formally.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Not officially.
Yeah. Did you go to school, college?
No.
No?
Don't you sense that about me?
No, I don't. Why would I sense that about you? You're
that rough-hewn quality?
Illiterate, intelligent man.
Illiterate?
No, I said a. No, you're a literate. There was a space between the...
Yeah. Well, I am. I read James Joyce, but my lips move.
There you go. So we learned something tonight. Phil Everly is responsible for Werewolves of London.
Yes, he is. Absolutely.
He wanted you to write a song with that title.
Mm-hmm.
That's Warren Zevon. You're on Idiot's Delight, just about 10 o'clock on this Sunday night. So, Warren, let me ask you this question. There are some songwriters who, when they have a huge across-the-board hit recording like that, Werewolves of London, who grow to kind of resent the song over the years because audiences will zero in on it and shout it out at live performances and won't be satisfied until you play it. And then there are other songwriters who just love the fact that, you know, one of their songs connected that way with people. How do you feel about that, about Werewolves of London and about that whole idea of having a hit? I mean, have you ever been bothered by that?
I suppose I would be bothered by it if people were unwilling to listen to new songs because they shouted for it continuously, but they don't. And sometimes I think that, I wouldn't say it was unfortunate, but in a way I think that because it was a big hit, that was kind of the anomaly. It was just kind of, I was never expecting to have one really in it. Sometimes I'm perceived as kind of a 70s artist as opposed to a very successful folk singer, which is how I see myself.
I see.
You know?
Right.
But I like the song. I've always liked it.
Yeah.
I think it's funny. I think it's kind of like a dumb song for smart people or something.
Right.
Something that's fun. And it's also, not only did Phil think of it, but in a way it's also a successful ripoff of my friend and mentor, Dr. Hunter S. Thompson, in style and substance.
Oh.
So I enjoy doing it because of that.
Your friend and mentor?
I would say so, yes.
Yeah. When did you develop that relationship with Hunter?
Well, I've been reading him since his first book, since Hell's Angel came out in the 60s.
I mean, do you know each other as well?
Yes.
When you say friend?
Yes, indeed, we do.
Yeah, yeah. What did you think?
I've received much, much wise counsel from the doctor over the past decade or so.
Werewolves of London, inspired by Phil Everly and Hunter Thompson. Now, there's an interesting thing to consider.
That's exactly right.
Hmm. Would you sing another song for us?
Sure. Do you want one from that era, Vin?
You would sing an old song? Yeah, sure.
Why wouldn't I? People really don't like singing old songs?
There are some people who don't, yeah.
None?
Yeah, there are some people who do.
Is it some kind of ghastly ongoing skin-shedding process or some kind of painful...
Possibly, yeah. Some people just get tired of the old stuff and don't, they have new stuff, and your new stuff is wonderful. I'm not asking you to sing old stuff in place of new stuff,
I never get tired of anything. I'm easily entertained, even by myself.
Good.
Especially by myself. Well, I went home with a waitress the way I always do. How was I to know she was with the Russians too? I was gambling in Havana. I took a little risk. Send lawyers, guns, and money. Dad, get me out of this. I'm the innocent bystander. Somehow I got stuck between the rock and the hard place.
that I'm down on my luck. Yes, I'm down on my luck. Wait, I'm down on my luck. And I'm hiding in Honduras. I'm a desperate man. Send lawyers, guns, and money. The has hit the fan.
It's Warren Zevon.
How could I tire of that?
That's a powerful song, man. That's a movie, that song. No, it's not. It's a song, that song. I begin to think of that, Warren, as the Arkansas song.
Arkansas?
Yeah. Because the opening...
You know about that night in Little Rock?
I can saw a woman in half, or in two, or whatever the opening line of it is. Arkansas, the Arkansas song.
Oh, I see. Arkansas.
Arkansas. Yeah. All right. Well, it's just it's my own personal little thing.
Because that night in Little Rock was real personal.
What? Was Carl Hiaasen there? Or
oh,
Phil
no.
Everly?
No.
No, none of those guys. Let's call for my next trick. I'll need a volunteer. Warren Zevon from the new album Life Will Kill You, which is just released. It's out on a label called Artemis Records. Relatively new.
Artemis
label.
Records.
Yes. Would you sing one more for us?
I'd be happy to.
Someone I like, who maketh my spirit to shine. Don't let us us get sick, don't let us get old, don't let us get stupid, all right. Just make us be brave, make us play nice, and let us be together tonight. Don't let us get sick, don't let us get old, don't let us get stupid, all right. Just make us be brave, make us play nice, let us be together tonight.
It's like a song that's always been there, that one.
That's a very nice thing to say, I think.
Yeah, I mean it. Don't Let Us Get Sick is the title of that song. It's the song that closes Warren Zevon's new album. The album is called Life Will Kill You. But hopefully not for a while yet. Hopefully you still have a few more years to go. And a few more songs like that in you.
Well, we'll try to have all the fun we can in the meantime.
Thanks for spending time with me tonight here on Idiot's Delight. Warren Zevon.
Thanks, man.
That's Warren Zevon and Back in the High Life again, a track from his album Life Will Kill You, and part of my interview with Warren, recorded on January 23rd, 2000.